Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr. You're listening to Fiber Talk. We do it twice a week. It's for needle workers. Mary Corbett, hi. How are you?
Hi, Gary. I'm good. How are you?
Just super. Just super. This is
happy to be back.
Yes, this is number 6. Yes.
Hey.
Wow.
That's quite a few.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can. I can't remember them all. I have no idea. I have no idea what we've talked about.
I have no idea either. And that was okay, putting good. This together. I was saying, have we talked about that? Who cares?
That's right.
Who cares?
Just repeat.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what got me going on this. And folks, we're just gonna talk about a bunch of basic stuff. You've done a couple of writings here lately about workspace and your perpetual problem with keeping things organized and put away.
That's right.
which I chuckle, but I relate to.
Yeah.
Because my work desk, you know, Marg and I are very much opposites there, because her work desk is, and we're in the same room, is everything's put away and stacked orderly and everything, and mine's a wreck. No matter how hard I try, it's just a wreck, and I have enough room around my keyboard to function.
Yeah.
And the other a couple weeks ago, I went on a mission, and I was throwing away stuff that, you know, I hadn't touched in months, and I was going to clear off some space, and something happened, and that project is stopped midterm.
Which is probably a good thing. If you clear it off too much, you probably wouldn't be able to work at the same
right.
level.
It screws me up. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not used to it.
Right. I can't function. But then when you wrote about that, and then I went back and read some of the articles you'd linked to, because you've written about it several times. So like, if anybody's wondering about keeping their place or their stitching area organized, Mary's got 3,000 topic or articles on it, at least 3,000. But, okay. You know, and I thought, you know, okay, now I built this space down in the family room. I got a nice corner, got a nice big table, easily 4, maybe 5 foot long by 3 foot, nice big workspace and shelving to put everything in. And you know what it looks like? It looks like my work desk.
I was going to say, like your desk.
It's like, for crying out loud, get it together. Because I was in, this is going to be so nice. Every time I go to stitch, I'll be able to spread things out. I am forever having to move things out of the way so I have room. And so when you wrote that, I thought, oh, here I am again. Same thing, same mess. I really got to just tackle it and get some discipline to it, because it becomes an encumbrance.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't know. I think it does for some personality types. For others, I think others probably work in a perpetual, what they call a creative disorganization or a creative mess, you know, which can be fine. But I have to make that effort too, you know, because it's so much easier just to keep going along and sort of scooting things aside to try to, you know, get the next thing going or work on this little project in this tiny area instead of in a clean space. Because straightening up in your mind can turn into a mountain, you know,
right.
instead of the little hill that it actually is. But I find that if I make the effort to clear off my table at the end of a work session, or at least to put everything and organize spaces, then I do get more done. I work more efficiently.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the discipline, I think, right there. When you finish a work session, for you work, for me fun, but for you work fun slash. But that's the discipline, and that's the discipline I don't have, is to put things away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. Clarification, I don't do it every day, and I should, but sometimes, you know, if a project is carrying over to the next day, if, you know, 7 o'clock rolls around and I'm like, I gotta stop. Sometimes I'll just walk away from it, you know, just
right.
say, okay, that's it. And then when I come back the next morning, I can pick up right where I left off. But I also have that luxury of a completely separate space Yes. I think if it were a living space and you had other people living with you, they might kill you.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I think that at least by the end, you know, the end of the week or say the end of a project for me, I always go through a cleanup so that I can start fresh with the next thing, you know?
Mm, okay. See, so. But see, you actually finish projects.
Well, I mean, it depends on it depends on how you define a project. So for me, a project isn't necessarily just a needlework project. A project might be a group of blog posts or a series of tutorials or whatever that I'm going to work on. It could be like right now I've been fiddling with video and things like that. So I have a lot of technical stuff out. And so that, you know, I have all different types of projects.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily just the, you know, embroidery project number one, number two, number three. It's, you know, just different types of projects for the website.
Well, and, yeah, so, and that's it. When you have that kind of thing, then to say you're doing a video and then you really need to do some stitching to keep that moving along, you don't want to put all the video equipment away.
Right.
Because, you know, that's time, because then it's got to come back out. Yeah. And
actually, that can be a huge hindrance when you do put things away. I think for some people, if you go to the effort at the end of, you know, your stitching session to pack up, you know, your slate frame, your threads and everything and put them neatly away, that could be a hindrance to actually making progress
yes.
on your stitching, because every time you have the opportunity to stitch, which that opportunity might not be a long stretch of time. It might just be 15 or 20 minutes where you could actually put some stitches in. Well, it's not worth taking all that out again. Right.
Right. Exactly.
So you don't make any progress. So for some people, keeping your project out and up is, I think, pretty important, you know, if they want to make progress.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, and that's the, what I do. Definitely. I agree 100%. You know, the yeah. active project I'm working on, when I stop it, you know, the threads get covered up, the piece gets covered up, but it's ready to go. And I really have developed a habit now of always starting the next thread before I quit so that I can literally sit down and go.
Yeah.
And,
that's a good idea.
It really does. It keeps the momentum going. And right. no, I'm a firm believer in that. My problem is the other things that I had out that should
yeah,
have been put away.
Yeah,
yeah, that's my problem.
All your idea stuff and, you know, the new book or the new fabric and the new thread or,
yep.
you know.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yes. So I, yeah, I mean, it just comes down to discipline, but it really frustrates mm-hmm. me in that I have this big, beautiful table space where I can have everything spread out. And now I'm going to have to go down there and tackle that mountain and make. You
know. Well, I think, you know what I think the analogy would be? Sometimes people, I think this is, I don't know. My sister and I were just talking about this. I have to get a smaller handbag because if I have a smaller handbag, I won't have as much stuff out, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was her mentality a couple years ago. So she got a smaller handbag so that she could keep things organized, you know, and then she said, I got to go shopping for a handbag. She told me this the other day because I can't stand this small space anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she got a bigger handbag, but then she just ended up with so much more stuff in it.
Right. Know? Right. Cause it'll so fit. It, yeah.
Yeah. Cause it fits. So it's the same idea. I think when you have more workspace, you're just going to end up with a bigger mess.
Yep.
Maybe.
Well, so that now that you have that, the new place, that must yeah. be even more of a constant battle. Cause you know, to that analogy, more space, more stuff, constant battle for you, or have you been able to keep that contained?
Well, I have the space divided up so that I have a, you know, it's a 3-bedroom apartment, or no, sorry, it's a 2-bedroom apartment with a living room. So it's 3 rooms. And in the living room that has the best lighting and everything, that's where I do most of my own work. So my embroidery, setting up projects, things like that. But then one of the bedrooms is an office. So that's where my computer, I have several printers. I have photography equipment set up, and I have a desk just to work on for designing and things like that, mm-hmm. drawing and stuff. So that's all office equipment. It's not very, there's really nothing embroidery in it. If you looked around, it just looks like office equipment. And then the other room is, thread storage, you know, all the fabric, dry goods,
right.
packaging space, packaging goods, equipment, my sewing machine, stuff like that. So, and they're not big rooms, you know, they're fairly small rooms, but they're separate. So
it's given, so this has given you the ability to compartmentalize your whole operation then.
Yeah.
And keep it. Yeah, that's very nice. I can see how that's got to be a huge plus.
Yeah. Yep. Because before I was doing everything that had to do with the technological side of the blog, you know, so my computer, my printers, all that kind of stuff, that was all in my bedroom at home. It's nice to have that in its own place. And then I don't have the same buildup of stuff here, because there's room to put things. What I don't have over here yet is, I don't have all my books over here, so I still have to move those over. And I'm having a hard time thinking about where I'm going to put them, because you would think, okay, look, you've got this whole studio now, you should have room for books, but I have so many books.
I was going to say, moving those books, that's a small moving van, isn't it?
Well, maybe not that, but it's, you know, I have to think about that for a while.
Yeah.
Because right now they're just all shut in a cabinet, you know, you can't see them, out of sight, out of mind.
Right. Yeah, but having them in your workspace, I'm sure there's been more than once where, oh, that's in that book, I need to go get that.
So, yeah, it's good to have the reference. And and one of my goals with that type of library, especially, I have a lot of old books, so old embroidery books, and, you know, from the end of the 1800s through the, you know, beginning of, or the, you know, I would say through the 1940s, there's a long spread of time there where they were producing some really good old books. And I have a lot of old books and publications, and I would like to have those accessible, you know, when I have classes locally.
Yeah.
You know, so the kids or adults that are passing through can use them, can look at them. And then same with all the other reference books and instructional books. It's just nice to be able to say, hey, you know, you like that, take a look at this book, you know,
sure,
and look at these projects, or this is how you would do that. And then to be able to say, sure, you can borrow the book, you know, show me what you do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So. Yeah. But no, I appreciate the problem in that. Okay. If you set up a bunch of shelves in your new place, mm-hmm. and bring all those books over, then that space you're giving up.
And that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to think twice about just what you want to do there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a goal for, I don't know, this summer, probably I'm going to tackle the book problem.
Never enough room.
That's right. I think that's primarily an American problem.
Yes.
Too, you know, that's why people have storage units or something. But really, I try to keep everything minimal over here. I really don't have, I mean, I have stuff that I work with, but I don't have, I mean, I hear of people who have like closets and closets full of fabric and, you know, I have six thread cabinets, and they're just little, you know, they're like the size of the type of like a file cabinet that you'd have under a desk,
mm-hmm.
you know, about that size. I have six of those, and they're up against a wall, and that's where all my threads are. And then I have four stackable, but low profile tubs that have fabric in them. And really, that's my stuff. I mean, obviously I have packing supplies and things like that. And,
right. Right.
I have two, carts, wheelie, you know, carts from IKEA that have, tools and things like that in them. And so that's it.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best ideas I've ever gotten out of you. And I don't implement it, but I'll tell you, I can see how that would be a real plus for me. I just have one of them. But those carts where you have all those tools and stuff in that you can just mm-hmm. wheel around, that's really a...
Yeah, that's pretty handy.
Yeah. Great idea. Yep.
Yeah, they are handy. Oh, and the other thing I guess I have is I have a lot of... I do have equipment. I forgot about that part. I do have some tubs of frames and hoops and,
yeah,
you know, some embroidery stands and things like that.
Right, right. Oh yeah, well that accumulates too. And, yeah, yeah. Because you wrote about it was designing a workspace, and then you wrote about being able to move around work stands, and if you're going to put together a space, make sure you leave room. Kind of map out where you're going to move and so you can get around. And I thought that was really a good piece of thinking there, because you don't always think about that. And then 3 months after you set up a space, you're going, wait, I'm tripping over this all the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
And well, you know where that idea just comes from? I watched my sister plan out her kitchen, because she had a kitchen remodeled about 10 years ago. And the person that was helping her design the kitchen kept talking about, you have to think of your traffic flow. How do you comfortably walk around your space?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just apply the same concept. You don't want, you know, say you use trestles to hold an embroidery frame or even just a floor stand. If every time you move, you are knocking that thing over or tripping over it, eventually it's going to drive you crazy and right. you're just going to want to get rid of it. You know, you have to think in terms of having the ability to move around your stuff if you have the space for it, you know?
Right. Well, I even think about that. Okay. You have a 3-bedroom or a 3-room, a place with a kitchen to work in.
Oh, yeah,
I have a corner in a family room. But mm-hmm. then there are a lot of people who have a chair and right. a stand and, you know, a box or something next to them.
Yep.
But really the same principles apply in that if you organize that little space
mm-hmm.
so that it's more functional, put a little work and a little thought into it. And you know, you're right. The kitchen designers, those are the people that's the first thing that comes up when we did our kitchen. What is your traffic flow? Because our traffic was terrible in the kitchen before. And then when we redid it, it just completely changed the room and it's no bigger. And, even if you're just operating with a chair and a basket or something to organize right. that a little better, it really makes you more efficient and I think enjoy the hobby better.
Right, right. Or even, so take the kitchen concept. When you're standing at the sink and you turn to, you know, load your dishwasher, if you have one, you know, do you walk across the room to load the dishwasher? No, it's right next to you, because that's how you're going to move from the sink to the dishwasher.
Right.
You know, with ease. So it's the same thing when you're setting up your stitching space, you know, think about where you put your light. Are you going to put it over your right shoulder? If you're right-handed, probably not. You're going to want that over your left shoulder. And then your little table where you're going to reach for things, if you're right-handed, you're going to want that to your right, not to your left, you know?
Right.
So you just have to kind of think of, okay, how am I going to move and how is this going to be the most efficient? So that's the same idea, really.
Yeah, and when you talk about lights, LED technology has...
has changed.
Oh, it's changed everything. It's changed everything. But it gives so much more versatility to needlework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you now, and in your living room where you're doing your stitching, I assume you have at least one big window, but what have you done for lighting? Are you using overhead lighting, or are you task lighting?
No, yeah, I use task lighting.
Okay.
Because I just can't. Overhead lighting, it's nice. I mean, I have obviously overhead lighting.
Yeah.
But I like something a little more directed, you know, for my needlework, something that's closer and
right.
brighter. I still use, I have different, you know, different lights in different areas depending on what I'm doing, but for just for my regular stitching for the hand embroidery, I still use those Blue Max lights that I talked about before. They're the Lighting Solutions or something like that. It's Blue Max is the name of the light, and they're 70 watt dimmable. They're not LED, although they do have out a line of LED now, but I haven't tried them because, you know, I'm not going to put the money in them while I have lights that work,
right.
you know?
Right. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
So I use those, and then I have a couple LED task lights on my work table that, mm-hmm. and my work table is kind of L-shaped in there. So I have, a light on one. Yeah, I do. I have a light on each of those, of the two tables that make up the L shape.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like to try one of the new LED lights from, you know, the people that do the Blue Max lights, but I haven't saved the money for that yet. And it's not a priority because I already have,
right.
I already have lights.
The lights work. We're good to go.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. But it's yeah. like my magnifier was a 2X magnifier and then with a ring of LEDs around it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. you know, I was sitting there last night for a couple hours and it just hit me again how I can hover over that magnifier and there's no heat.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Oh, it's so, you know, it's just so nice. Yeah, exactly, because you don't have to have it over to the side. You don't have to back off to let the heat
cool
out.
Cool down. Yeah, that's yeah. right.
It just sits there and just goes and
yeah.
and uses essentially no energy and mine yeah. has a little battery pack so you can take it with you and it's
yeah. mine too. That's I don't use my magnifier very much, but that's just like that sounds like the one that I have too, and it's it does. The LED lights are great for those, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a good setup to have, I think.
Yeah,
if you're
it's
using. Yeah.
And it's the thing that is, even in a small space, you can get LED lights, and they're so light that you can hang them off of a wall, or there's so many
yeah.
options. That yep. you don't have to have a stand to hold the light or a table. It can,
yeah.
It's really just change the game. And
I like the little, like for traveling and stuff, I like the little clip on, you know, the book lights for stitching, and they work fine. I mean, I've used them in hotel rooms and everything. So
yeah. Oh yeah. No, I have one. It's in the bag. Yep.
Yep.
with an extra set of AAAs to
that's right.
to keep going. Because, yeah, you do have to have the batteries. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I think BrightTech actually... Not BrightTech. It's Mighty Bright. They do make a rechargeable... Somebody makes a rechargeable one, I think. And then somebody has one that plugs in. Which I think is kind of awkward.
Yes.
The plug-in one, but... You know, if you had to.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, my travel light and I have to plug it in. Yeah, no, I'll just use batteries. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, to clip that on stretcher bars or whatever, that's the power of it. Yes, it's right there with you. Yeah.
One of the problems that I, speaking of lighting, so going to any of the, I know that going to the EGA workshops and things like that now, they don't want you to bring a light that plugs in.
Right.
So they're getting rid of the plugs and stuff.
Yeah.
And people have asked, you know, what do you recommend for situations where you can't plug a light in? And I've researched it. I still haven't found any that really, you know, they have they're all USB rechargeable lights, but it seems like their brightest setting will only last about 45 minutes, and then it starts to increasingly dim over about 4 hours before it has to be plugged in again.
Yeah.
And to me, that's not ideal. So I'm sure that the technology is out there, and I'm sure that there probably are some very good rechargeable lights and everything out there somewhere. I just haven't found the perfect one yet, you know.
Yeah, and you run into that with rechargeable LEDs in general. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, burns for 4 hours. Yeah. There's actual light coming out over 4 hours, but can you use it? No.
Yeah, that's right. No. It's only bright for the first 30 minutes.
Yeah. Have a nice day. But that's, if you're going to those seminars, because A&G is the same thing. No cords, no plugins anymore. If you're doing those kinds of things, well, I tell you, if someone were to come up with one that is easily portable and will last a long time, that would be gold, because
you could always get the battery pack thing.
And I've seen a lot of people do that. Yeah, at one of the A&G or one of our local chapter meetings, someone had bought a bunch of them, those backup battery things, for several people. And exactly. And those will last a long time. There's some pretty good ones. Yeah.
Especially because with an LED light, like you said, it's not pulling a lot of power. So.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, I had one given to me as a editor gift at a conference. Uh-huh. And it literally could not drain it. I mean, it was about a half inch thick and maybe 4 by 6 inches.
Oh yeah, that's not bad.
Could not drain it. Oh, and it was wonderful. And then one day I pulled it out of my bag and it had bulged in the middle.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. So that had to go, because eventually that's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And then another editor at an event recently, where we were there all afternoon listening to people drone on, hauled his out, and it's like, oh, I wish mine was still.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and they're not expensive in relative terms.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, they're not bad.
Yeah.
Yep. So. And they're great to have for your phone or anything anyway, especially if you live anywhere where, power outages or bad weather might be a problem.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, no, the ones that they had at Fox, and I don't remember the brand. I noted it, and then I forgot about it. But they were about that size, about dimensions, about a little bigger than a paperback book, and half inch thin, and they would. And that's what all of them were getting them for, was to go to seminar classes and stuff, and have their light burn all day long. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yep.
Yeah. Yep. Well,
good idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it can be done. And there's no way any facility is going back to allowing you to have cords. Because it was always a fire and safety hazard anyway. And now the technology is enough that there's just no way they're going to let you do that.
Right.
if people are going to classes, they've got to figure something out. Yep.
They have to be portable.
I wondered about it. This is another thing that I crossed my mind the other day. And because I have, and we may have talked about this, I've got 3 or 4 laying tools and 3 or 4 scissors, and you have 3 or 4,000 of each. And
not really.
But and I find myself and I've got 3 sets of number of 3 different types of needles, and I find myself always. You try this, and oh, that's really good. And then you find, how you human nature, you kind of migrate back to the old tried and true. And I wondered if you get to try out so many things. Do you find yourself moving on to something new, or do you try that for a while and then just migrate back?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. I see what you're saying. I think I try different things, and I measure them against the tools that I know to be good and that have longevity, that have served well,
Yeah.
So I'll try new things, but I do have my favorite go-to tools and everything. So for scissors, I always go back to Dovo scissors.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple pairs, and one is a cutting, you know, shears for cutting.
Yeah.
And then I have two pairs of Dovo embroidery scissors, and I pretty much use those the most frequently. So I have other scissors and everything, but nothing measures up to those. They're just my comfort scissors. They are always just perfect. So I use those all the time. With needles, I really do like the tulip needles. I reviewed those last year. But
yeah, I wondered if you'd stuck with those. Yeah.
Well, stuck with them? Is that a joke? Is that a pun, Gary? Yes.
No.
okay. So I do use them. I have, because I had to buy them, you know, in order to review them. So I have them and I like them and I use them, but I have a wider variety of Bowen needles.
Mm-hmm.
And Bowen are just, they're always good. So when I measure the cost against the functionality of and the quality of the needle, I'm more likely to buy Bowen needles than I am to buy tulip needles, because tulip needles are very expensive for what they are. They're good needles and I like the feel of them. And sure, I would love to, you know, to be able to use them all the time,
right,
and to have the whole run of the line, but who can afford that? So yeah, I think I use more Bowen needles than I do the tulip needles.
Right. See, that's the very thing that got this question in my head for when we talked was, I'm working on a reproduction sampler on 40 count linen. Mm-hmm. And I have a good fistful of Bowen 28, size 28 tapestry needles.
Yeah.
And I don't think Tulip makes them 28s.
I don't think so.
No. And so I couldn't buy them. So I find myself using the Tulip needles for needlepoint.
Yeah.
But then I go back and use the Bowens because I have all these 28s and I have a little system that uses more needles than is necessary, but you know, there I was with these Bowen needles and what's wrong with these? These are just fine. They just work just great. Yeah.
Yeah. And Bowen makes 28, or is that John James?
Well, mine are Bowen. They're 28.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So they do too. Yeah. And I use John James too. I have, you know, it just depends on what I have on hand, but, yeah, the tulip needles are nice, and I love the little tubes, and I like to store them in my little plastic Q-tip case, you know. All that's fine, but I don't have the range of needles that I need to work with.
Right.
And I just can't afford to pay for them. They're just expensive.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. Are they that much better to be worth the money? They are very nice, but you know, and this happens in every hobby. I mean, I had, you know, same thing with the aquarium hobby and with my cycling stuff. You pick up things. Oh, that looks really great. And then pretty soon down the road, you're not using it anymore. And,
right.
Yeah.
I think the question that you would ask is that if you could afford the things, if you could afford, for example, if I could afford, tulip needles, if I could afford them and to afford all the ones in the sizes and types that I need, would I opt only for tulip needles as opposed to, say, Bowen or John James or anything like that? Even then, I wouldn't say, yes, I would only opt for tulip needles because they are good. But in a sense, a needle is a needle. And as long as it works and it doesn't have flaws, you know?
Right, right.
If it does the job and it's not crusty, then hey.
Yeah. Because that's just it. Even if you can afford them, why would you if there really isn't, you know?
Well, I do like the feel of them. It's, well,
yeah.
yeah. And I like them, especially the number 7 Cruel needle. That's the one that that's the size and type of needle I use probably the most. I've been using on the projects that I'm working on, I've been using a tulip needle because I have that size.
Right.
And it does, it feels good.
Yeah.
So I could see if you had the money and you said, you know, that those are the needles that I'm going to use forever. I could see doing that to a degree, but I just can't imagine. Well, I don't, I think they are expensive. Yeah. So.
Well, and there is a distinctive feel with them, mm-hmm. And yeah. It is very nice. And
they're nice and slippy. Yes. I don't know what it is, but yes. Yeah,
that's the term. I'm writing that down. Slippy.
It's not. They're not slippery, but it's right. Just sort of slippy. They slip in and out very easily. You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, nice. No, they're very nice. They're very nice. And
yeah.
But see, I wouldn't if they came along with a 28 embroidery needle. Tapestry needle. Right, yeah. Now, I wouldn't.
Yeah, because you have the other ones, so right. Why spend the money on them?
And I've got a bunch of them, and I'm happy with the supply. And like with these samplers, I'll thread up several needles in different colors, and because you're just doing little pieces of color here and there, and so it takes a bunch of needles, and so that, you know, that's what works for me. And yeah, these Bowen ones. And the thing for me that's why Bowen? Well, because that's what the first time I bought any of any number, that's what was in the store. And so, all right, I'll try those. And they were perfect. So,
well, I don't get me wrong. I like a good needle, you know, so if I were going to classify the needles that I would, probably use the most frequently. So I would say Bowen and John James are probably, they're two common needles for needlework. I would probably use the Bowen over the John James because I do think that Bowen is it's a better needle. It just, to me, it's a better needle. I have problems with John James needles off and on, not all the time, but off and on, where they'll snap or they'll, you know, or I'll open the package and the eye is missing on the needle, you know? but I would imagine that happens with any, you know, with any company, there's going to be some, you know, flaw, and that's normal, I guess. But I went through this period of time where it seemed like every John James needle package that I opened, there was something wrong with at least one of the needles.
So
that's when I started using the Bowen needles and I liked them better. And so, you know, on that price level, I would choose Bowen over John James probably. But again, you know, it depends on what's available and what I have on hand.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be that picky that that I would say, oh, I'm not going to use a John James needle or whatever. Yeah. No, a needle's a needle. If it works, it works.
You're not going to be a needle snob then. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you buy them in bulk?
It depends on, if I'm putting together classes or kits or anything, of course, I buy them in bulk. Yeah. And usually if I'm buying in bulk, it's going to be either Bowen or John James. And, the last thing that I had to buy for bulk was, Bowen didn't make the size that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So they were John James and they were fine. They were great. So yeah, that was for the tapestry small kits that I did.
Oh yes,
And those are the little, I think they're number 10 tapestry beading needles. You know, the dull point beading type needles, and they were fine. You know.
Yeah. So, yeah, that changes the game when you start putting kits together.
You gotta buy in bulk.
Well, and that becomes a whole different ball game too in terms of quality. And like if you buy 100 needles and 25 of them are bad, yeah, we can't be having that too. So yeah,
that's right. Yeah. So with needles, I guess I'm not as picky. So with scissors, I always go back to the Dovo. With needles, I guess I'm not as picky. With other things like frames and hoops. So with frames, I always use the Evertight frames. I always go back to those, unless I need to use a slate frame, and then I'll use a slate frame. Between slate frames that I have, I use them interchangeably. There's not one that I would say I will only use this kind or that kind. With hoops, I always use the wood, the Hardwick Manor hoops, just because I have them and because they're very good hoops. They're the same as the Klaas and Gessmann hoops that people get in Europe, but over here they're Hardwick Manor.
Yeah.
That's how they're branded. With stands, I always go back to my Needlework System 4 for a floor stand. If I have to use trusses, I use trusses. I use the ones that I got from, oh, shoot. What's the...
Mythic?
It's... No, uh-uh. Yeah. No. No, it's Lucy Barter's husband. She's Lucy Barter's at the San Francisco School of Needlework and Design out in San Francisco. So he started a company where they're producing trusses and they will produce slate frames eventually. And I reviewed them on my website. So I'll have to send you the link because I can't remember the name of the company off the top of my head. But those are the trusses that I use. They're nice and sturdy. They're very compact. They don't have a huge footprint. So they're good.
Yeah, because like those things can suck up a lot of floor space.
Yeah, they can. Because it depends on the manufacturer. Sometimes they make them very deep, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So these aren't exceptionally deep, but they're deep enough to hold, you know, any size frame that you want to use. Because yeah, they're fine. They're like the perfect trusses. So that's what I go to if I need to use trusses, but for stands, I always use the Needlework System 4.
Yeah.
Cause that's what I have. Actually, I have tried a lot of stands, but I ended up with, several that just came my way from people getting rid of them and things like that. So I think any popular, well-known stand I've pretty much tried that's a clamp type stand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always go back to that Needlework System 4. And then,
well, that is number one, built like a tank. I wish I had one.
Yeah.
Built like a tank, but so versatile. And I think really well designed. Every time I see people use them, I just go, oh boy, that looks like it's just right.
Yeah. And I like the frame clamp on it. It's just, it's good. It's a good mechanism. You know, I have to have the extension arm for it, just because of the way I sit or where I sit, or if I'm sitting at a, you know, a table or whatever, it's just easier to have that extension arm.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. That's the thing about that system is all of those things are available. You can have it the way you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the same way though, with most, you know, like the Lowry is the same way. And a lot of people prefer that stand. It just didn't work as well for me for the way I, you know, set myself up, but I think it's probably just as good a stand.
Yeah. Now, see, I have a Case Creation that was given to me that has just been perfect. You know, it really does well for, I use it for needlepoint. And then if I'm doing something in a hoop, I'll use it for that. But then when I'm like with my reproduction samplers, then I modified one of those standard wood stands with two arms on it that I can rest the scroll frame on. And that, that works just fine for scroll framework, but everything else I go back to the Case Creation, and that's a fairly old stand that I have because it had some age on it when I got it, and it's still rock solid. You know, it's
that's good.
Yeah, because you wonder over time, do those things wear? And no, this one hasn't at all. Yeah,
yeah. I've steered away from, just because of some bad experiences, from any stands that are wood on wood when it comes to the tightening mechanisms right. and stuff like that, because they do tend to wear.
Yep.
But so I think that's one of the reasons I like the Needlework System 4 and the Lowry too. It's, they're not wood on wood, they're metal, you yeah. know? So,
well, that's, yeah, with my, my stand that I use for the scroll frames, and then I have a lap stand that's wood. Mm-hmm. I've washered them up.
That
really helps clamp down. But, yep. like the one I use for scroll frames, it doesn't get moved around. It's just two arms and I just rest the scrolls on it. But,
right.
the lap stand, is a case creation. And yeah, that one at times gets frustrating because it seems like I'm forever tightening the, and it does get frustrating. Yes.
Yep. They don't stay. It seems like they just don't stay as tight when it's wood on wood.
Right. And so. I've had experience like when I've been in Arizona and the wood starts to dry out. It's like, will you stay where I put you? Yeah. And then I come home and it gains moisture and then it's, you know, back to normal. Yeah. And frustrating. But that's one of the issues. Yes.
Yeah. So that's and then when it comes to other tools and stuff, as far as go-to tools, I use, I really don't have a lot of like laying tools and things like that. I just have a couple. I have one of the best laying tools, the Shea Pendry.
Right.
The BLT. And,
I bet you use that the most.
I use it frequently, but, it has such a sharp tip on it that it really depends. If I'm working with something that I really want to be careful of the threads that are already on there, the stitches that are already on there, I'll just reach for like a large tapestry needle instead. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to snag, and it's easy with that BLT because the tip is so sharp.
Yes.
It's easy just to, oops, snagged it. Or I have actually stuck it through the fabric where I didn't want to, you know, things like that. But mostly if you're using linen, you know, and you stick something like that in there and you catch yourself before you sink the whole tool through, you know, if it's not going to show up. But if you're working with something like silk or satin or whatever, and you jab the fabric accidentally, you know, it could be a problem.
Yeah.
And I have done that. So.
Yeah. Now see, I have four laying tools, and that's the one I go to. I have two that I go to. That one is the one I use the most, but I also have one that's maybe 3 inches long that, I pick up an awful lot, but that metal one, I don't know. It just fits me right, and I do like that long, narrow
thing. Shaft.
Yeah, I find that to be a real plus, so I end up using that a lot. And then I bought one of those porcupine quill ones.
Oh, okay.
Jeez, that was stupid.
Yeah. I think I've had one, but it's not something I use over and over again. Yeah. I have a little one that I got from a reader as a gift, and it's and she sent it to me because she uses it. She bought it, and it's I think I mentioned it vaguely in our last podcast, a tool that I was going to review that I didn't mention yet. And it's this laying tool, and it's from Jenny Aiden Christie in the UK. And she will eventually put them on her website, I think. Her dad makes them. And it's a beautiful little tool, and it's nice. It's small, but it's weighted, and it's beautiful. It's
wood?
It's not wood. It's metal. It's I think stainless steel, and it's really just a beautiful little tool, and it's easy to hold.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like for her to get them up on her site because I would like to review it, but I told her I wouldn't until she was ready.
Right. Right.
And, so that's another one that I reach for a lot, but those are the only ones I have really.
So that waiting just gives a nice balance to it.
Yes, and it's and the fact that it's just small, it's like a little extension of your hand, you know. I have other laying tools. I have some wooden ones that I've had for a while. But they're not super nice wooden ones. You know, they were just cheap little wooden ones that I found for, you know, $8 or whatever here or there. Yeah. And they're not exceptional. And I do have another small wooden one that was a gift from a friend, and it's very nice, but it's fat. It's kind of like an awl.
Oh.
And it's so it's a different, because I stitch pretty close to my fabric. So I like a small laying tool. Mm-hmm. You know, that where the shaft is actually small. So if I'm using something fatter like that, it's I'd have to only be using it with a longer thread, I guess.
Yeah.
So I reach for the BLT or a tapestry needle, depending. And then that little one from Jenny is really nice.
Yeah.
And I've been using it lately quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't like the long ones. I can't like that quill one. I should have never bought that. I mean, they just look really neat, and I wanted to have one, and I used it once, and it flexed too much, and it was too long. Yeah. My hand was too far away from the work.
Yeah,
and
I like the stability of a shorter laying tool. You know, it just seems to be you have more control over it or something.
Yeah, that's what I feel, because if those long ones, I feel like the hand is too far from the work.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I have control over it at all. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's about it. I mean, I don't know what other kind of tools are there. What a silly question for me to ask, but I'm trying to think of what other tools that, you know, what do we use when we embroider?
Not much.
I mean, I have some needle cases that, you know, that I've made that I use, you know, when I travel or when I have a, you know, a little project I want to be portable. So I, you know, we'll use those. And I have a couple just standard pin cushions. I'm getting ready to make something though, because I want one of those pin cushiony arm thingies so that I'm not constantly sticking my needle in my, you know, the arm of my chair.
Oh, you do that?
I know I shouldn't, but because it does, it will.
Wow, Mary.
It'll ruin your upholstery.
No kidding.
But you know, like I said, I think I told you this the last time, the chairs that I have are, you know, Craigslist specials, 2 for $100. So I tend to, if I'm in a hurry or whatever, I'll just stick a needle in there, and I keep thinking, you know, this is dumb. I know I shouldn't be doing this. So I'm going to make one of those little pin cushiony armchair thingies that has the little ort sack that hangs off them.
Oh,
so you
okay.
can drop your threads in there, because my, this place, my studio,
is that going to be your brand name? Thin pin cushiony armchair thingy.
That's, I mean, what do you call it?
Yeah.
What to call it?
You might struggle to market that. You might think about that.
Yeah, well, it's a bit general, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
but I think people will know what I'm talking about though, because it's you know, it has a little sack hanging off the side so you can drop your thread scraps in it. And I think that would be a great thing, because even though I have a container for my thread scraps, it's all the way over there, you know, compared to where I am. And I don't necessarily reach over and stick a thread in the container every time. I'm more likely to just put it on the arm of my chair. And so eventually it also ends up on the floor, or it ends up
stuck. Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't stay there.
No, that's right. It ends up stuck on my clothes. I can't tell you how many times I've gone out and somebody said, "Oh, you have a thread." Like, really?
Of course I do.
But so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to make something for there because I really don't want to keep sticking my needle in the arm of the chair.
And this is why we can't have nice things.
I suppose. Well, okay, I'll tell you a secret. I did get a chair. I mean, I got a nice chair.
Oh, okay.
And I'm very excited about it. Because it's a game changer. I never ever thought. So the last time we talked, you had asked about chairs and I was like, "Well, I just sit in these, you know, if I'm sitting in a chair, it's just one of these Craigslist specials." Which, you know, they're decent chairs. I have no problem with that. And I never thought, you know, you need your comfortable chair. But you, for some reason, you got me thinking that I do spend a lot of time embroidering.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would be nice to have a chair. So I started looking around for better chairs. That would fit, you know, a budget like mine, which is not an expansive budget. And I didn't find anything that I liked, you know, and I kept saying, well, it's really not worth it. It's not worth it. And then I came across this one chair that is just, it was beautiful and it was so comfortable. And it's a small and it's compact. It's a recliner, which I don't think you could recline. I don't know. Can you recline and stitch? I don't think I can. But
I'd fall asleep.
Yeah, I think I would yeah. too, or something. I don't know. But just not reclined, it's a very comfortable chair.
Yeah.
And I looked at the price tag and I was like, oh my goodness, no wonder I am never buying that. and then of course I was perusing Craigslist one day. And there was the same chair.
Oh.
And I couldn't believe it. And I'm looking at it, I thought, that is the same exact chair. And it was like 1/6 the price.
Ooh.
And the lady had only had it for, she had had it for, I think, 6 months. And they discovered that they needed a lift recliner for her husband.
Oh.
Instead of this, you know, style of, and it's even got the little button that's motorized. And I thought, that it can't be the same chair. It just can't. So I contacted her and she told me where she got it, which was the same store I had been in looking at this chair. And it was the same brand. And I was like, yeah. It's the chair. I can't believe it. It's a sign. I'm supposed to have this chair. You know? So I did, I got it. And it was wow. So I have this chair and the thing is, it's leather and I cannot stick.
Nope. No, Mary, no.
And so I was sitting there the other day testing it, you know, cause I just got it last week and I was sitting in it and I pulled my stand up and everything and it's just perfect cause it's got space between, you know, the bottom of the chair and the floor. So my floor stand works with it, all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't take up a lot of room or anything. And I sat down, I started stitching, and I went to change threads, and I'm holding on to my needle, and I'm looking at the arm of the chair, and I thought, oh, gosh, I can't do that, can I? So I had to, you know, I had to go get a pin cushion to make sure it was right next to me, and I have a little magnetic pin cushion, so I just stick it on my light pole, you know, and that way it's next to me. But it's still on my left side instead of my right side, which I normally would stick my, you know, I'd do something with my needle on the right side of me because it's in my right hand. And that's when I said, I'm going to make one of those pin cushiony bag thingies that hang off here. I don't know what you call it. So yes, that's how that came up. But I did.
And you so wanted to stick that needle in that armchair.
Yeah, I looked at the needle. I looked at the arm of the chair and I'm looking at that leather and I'm like, no, I don't think you're supposed to stick needles in leather.
No, that would be bad.
Yeah. But that was a fortuitous find. And I really have to thank you for it because I never would have even thought,
oh,
maybe you are supposed to have a, you know, a special chair. Maybe there is something more comfortable than this, because the chairs actually that I was using, they weren't comfortable, mm-hmm. but they were, I didn't really care because they're functional. I mean, it's a chair, but you know, it's kind of nice to have a comfy chair.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a firm believer in the chair. I really am. Yeah.
Well, now I know.
That office one, yeah, the office one I use is, boy, I got it all adjusted just right, and nothing beats it. Yeah.
Well, it took me a long time to, I mean, I never really thought about it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but they, you know, I think a lot of people do that. It, do that not just with needlework, but in general with chairs. You'll just adapt to it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's at home, of course, in your living room, you have, you know, nice furniture that's comfortable, and people come and they sit in your furniture, and, you know, you want it to look nice and you want them to be comfortable, and you want to be comfortable when you're sitting, you know, at home. But I never thought of it in terms of, because I don't do my
in terms of the place where you spend most of your day,
most of my time. That's just it. And I don't really I don't do needlework really in the living room at home, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I was always doing it, even when I was working at home, it was out in the garage.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. Yeah. Oh, we're gonna. Oh man, we're gonna run out of time. What I was. I wanted to ask. What is the garage just where the books are now, or has it evolved into something else?
Well, the garage is still where the books are.
Okay.
They're in a cabinet out there, but there's other stuff. I mean, that's where our household storage and stuff is.
Right.
So, you know, Christmas decorations, anything that you think. Because I think I've told you before, it's a very small house. So even if you wanted, you know, you go shopping and you buy extra toilet paper or paper towels or whatever, it doesn't fit inside our house.
Uh-huh. Right.
So
right.
That's the stuff that goes out in the garage. You right. know? So, yeah, it's just household storage
could,
and stuff.
Could you move back there with your needlework now? Or what,
is it? Well, I don't think I would, because I have been working much more efficiently.
Uh-huh. But I mean, has the space eroded away?
No, I mean, if I had to, I would just,
you could make it work.
Okay. Restructure that space again.
Yeah.
and move back in. But I don't see that necessarily happening, or I hope not, because it's made a whole difference in the way I can go about working.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that I can get done. And I do need to, I have to expand the business side of needle and thread a bit. And I can't do that in that space.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, the reason I ask is we have a 2-car garage that we used to keep 2 cars in.
Oh.
And then when our son moved out, and Mark and I just have 1 car because we have no need for 2 cars. And we don't know how it happens. And we do an annual clean out. And right now you can get 1 car in the garage.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, this is ridiculous.
When I was growing up, that was the thing. Any house we lived in that had a garage, Memorial Day was garage cleaning day, and or Labor Day, one or the other. And, you know, it was like, oh, look, we can actually put a car in there. And then, you know, 6 months later, we were
ready. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is about that, but this when the weather breaks here in Illinois, I'm on a mission.
Yeah, I think it's called entropy.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's everything tends towards chaos.
Yes.
You know, and and I think that's what happens in our
whether it's in
the garage or in your needlework space. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, entropy is the law of nature.
Yep. So. Yep. Yeah. Well, that garage is going to catch its lunch. I'm sick of it. Sick of it.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right. Got to stop.
Okay.
Always fun.
Alas. Yes. It's always good to talk to Gary.
Thanks for doing it.
Anytime you want.
Thanks for listening. And I don't know who's coming back Wednesday. I have no idea.
Okay.